Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. I have some announcements. If there's a Deanna Perry in the office, would she go to the message center in Spanton Hall? Also in Spanton Hall, there's a lost and found department. If anything should be lost over the weekend and turned in, it will be over there. We have a dispensary in this building here that will be manned 24 hours a day. If any of you should need first aid or any type of medical help, they will be glad to assist you. The Actors Guild will put on another segment of the play tomorrow afternoon at 12 o'clock in Ray Hall. For those of you who have dinner tickets for Saturday evening that are marked Chuckery, the Chuckery will not be open and you are to go to the faculty dining room. Tickets for those of you who still need them may be purchased in the lobby of Bolger Hall. The literature table is located right outside of this room and will be open tomorrow from approximately 8 till 5 p.m. If you aren't staying on campus and haven't registered yet, make sure you go in Spanton Hall. You'll get your name tag and the pocket schedule for the weekend. Eddie Young from Cleveland is a fellow who is taping all the meetings. He has a few high-speed duplicators here on campus, and he reproduces tapes at 60 an hour. You can purchase those in Bolger Hall, which is right across the square. And after the Sunday morning breakfast, there will be a table set up in East-West Hilltop Dining Hall. For those of you who wish to order tickets, or tapes rather, and cannot wait. And for those of you who can wait, he will still be reproducing the tapes in Bolger Hall. We're sorry, but no other taping is allowed by the University of Akron. On your pocket schedules is the dates for next year's Founders Day. That is June 20th, 21, and 22 of next year. Flyers announcing this event will be out early in March. We recommend that you register early, as this year we closed up, or we filled up, before the end of April. Is there anyone here tonight celebrating their first year of sobriety? Is there anyone? Would you like to come up and read the preamble, please?
Your first year, you learn, I guess.
Now, where do you want this red hand?
What's your name? Okay. What's your name?
Okay, my name is Ken Darko, and I'm from Kent. And I'm an alcoholic. Please. The Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for the AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Thank you.
Thank you.
comes the part of Founders Day that I like best, hearing from the old timers, into action with now, how it was now and how it was back then. The five people that are on the podium with me represent 160 years of sobriety. And now I will turn the meeting over to the moderator, a real good friend of mine from Canton, Ohio, Ross W.
Thank you, Keith. My name is Ross. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. We do want to welcome you to Founders Day 79. Like I told you last year, it's not a solemn occasion. It's a happy, joyous occasion. Turn loose, have fun. You're going to feel love and fellowship bouncing off of these walls. You're going to cry a little. You're going to laugh a little. And once in a while, you'll get one of these characters who'll have you doing both at the same time. And that's rough. But we do want you to be loose and have fun. We don't even want you to behave too good. Anything short of getting in jail is fine. That old Lou over on the Breakfast Club, he tells stories to loosen up the audience. I'm not too good at it, but I don't know. Maybe I'd better not even try it. But it's got to be a hot weekend. I think we have plenty of lemonade and plenty of soft drink machines. I wonder if any of you has tried that new soft drink from Iran. It's called Ayatollah Cola. It gives everybody gas but us. You know, I've been sober about, it's five weeks short of 29 years is what it is, and I'm I'm down to the point now I only have one bad vice left. That's playing golf. It's a hell of a shape to be in, and one vice. Let me tell you a little golfing story. That's for the golfers in the crowd. This young couple met, and after a whirlwind romance of a few days, they were married and went away on a three-week honeymoon. And the first night back after the beautiful honeymoon, they were sitting in the house, and he said, "Now let's come down to earth a little bit and get acquainted, get to know each other. We really don't know each other, and let's talk and leave nothing unsaid." She said, "I agree." He said, "Now one thing you may find objectionable in me," he said, I'm a golf nut. Said, "I've played golf 4 days a week for years and years, and I want to continue to play a lot of it." She said, "I don't think that would be any problem." She said, "I have something I want to confess to you too." He said, "What's that?" She said, "I'm a hooker." He said, "You're a hooker?" She said, "Yes." He said, "Well, did you ever try rolling that right hand a little more over on the club?" We think I'll give up my daytime job. You know, I think all of us, let's get down to business now, that's enough of that. All of us, after we come into AA, the longer we're in, I think the more grateful we are to the people who were on hand to greet us and welcome us. And there's a lot of us wouldn't have been welcome much anyplace else, you'd better believe I wouldn't have been. And I think we do become more grateful to the people who welcomed us on the AA scene. Our panel up here tonight, since it is the old-timers portion of Founders Day. Have been greeting newcomers for a long, long time. Each one of them was a lot of help to me personally when I came on the scene. Each of them are to this day active in all facets of AA. Our first gentleman here tonight, he did pull a little bit of a switch. He left West Virginia in a little bit different way than most of us did. I'm a West Virginian, but the authorities brought me to the Ohio border and told me to hit the road. But this gentleman, he sobered up in West Virginia and then came to Akron. That was a little different. He's been active in the Barberton group, still is today. He's had every job there is to have an inner group and has done a first-rate job in all of them, still very active. I'd like to present to you Herb M. from the Barberton group.
Am I supposed to open this meeting with a prayer? Yes, I will. I just ask Ross. Let's get this over with first. He called me, I think, about the last of April or the first week in May. Can you hear me? I can hear you. And asked me if I would be on this panel, and I said, well, there's a lot of people in and around this part of the country who have been sober longer than I have. He said, yeah, and I named one and named the other, named first half a dozen people, and he said they'd already been on. So he had me back in the corner, and I got to the point where I couldn't say no anymore, so I told him I would. And he doesn't know how near he came to getting a call Wednesday this week. I don't know what it was, this dumb virus hit me, and Wednesday afternoon I was running the temperature 102, and I couldn't talk at all then. I was a lot more croaky than I am now. And I just about called Ross, but Frances persuaded me not to, because she said she was really looking forward to this. Frances is the girl that I've been going with for the last 46 years. So if I have to bark once in a while, please bear with me. I don't feel like an old timer. Well, except this week, I felt pretty old all week long. But I don't feel like an old-timer. Maybe it's because I still enjoy the activity of AA, and maybe one reason for that is when I first came in, even in Charleston, where I sobered up, I worked nights. And you don't get to go to too many AA meetings at night, and I worked nights until 1966. And that was, of course, after I came to Akron. And you just don't get in many AA meetings. You don't get to meet many of the old-timers. You don't get to meet many AAs. And so in 1966, when I started working days, I went the other way a little too much, but I started going to meetings, and like getting the thing started, I couldn't cut it off. But you know, I'm still having one awfully good time. But my working nights, I happened to meet one of the real old-timers in this program. His story's in the big book, in the first edition of the big book, Ward of a Probate Court. And his name is Bill. And I worked nights then. I lived out in Portage County, east of here. And I got off at 2 o'clock, and I'd go out through Kent, and sometimes I would stop in a diner out there, a 24-hour diner, and go in and have coffee and milk, or coffee and pie. I mean, coffee and pie, or milk and pie. And this man said, I think I've seen you somewhere. And he had. He'd seen me at a few meetings, a few I'd gotten to go to. And it was Bill Van Horn. And, you know, every night I got off after that, even during the cold weather, when it was very improbable that Bill Van Horn was walking the streets of Kent when he couldn't sleep, I would still go through Kent through that same route and by that same diner, hoping to see Bill Van Horn, so I could go in and have some fellowship with one of the real old timers. Ross has already given away my origin, the place of origin, and I'm not, I had some good times in West Virginia, and I had some pretty bad times, but the man who helped me most, I believe, among the West Virginians AAs that I knew after I came into this pro fellowship down there, was a fellow named Al Kelly. Now, I can the only names that I will mention, full names of these people who are deceased, and when they passed on, they did they had done honorably by themselves in AA. So Al Kelly had come up here from Charleston in 1941 to get Dr. Bob Smith to sponsor him. And you know, during those days, it wasn't so easy. It was made just a little harder for people to get in this way of life, to get in this fellowship. And Dr. Bob took one look at Al Kelly, and he told him, "No, you don't look like you're sick enough, Kelly. Go on out and have yourself a good time. Come back in a couple of years. Maybe we can handle that." This actually happened. But Kelly persisted. He knew he had hit his bottom, whether Dr. Bob realized it or not. So after two or three days here in Akron, and he practically camped on Dr. Bob's doorstep, then Dr. Bob agreed to take him on. And he followed him around, and he learned a lot. Of course, he learned a lot from Dr. Bob, but you know, he was the kind of a man. Al Kelly was a real salesman. He was a super salesman, I've been told. I don't know. But instead of going back to West Virginia and picking up the loose ends and getting back in the swing of things, he stayed here in Akron for 8 months and set up pins in a bowling alley because he wanted to be near the real old timers. And that included, of course, Dr. Bob and Bill Dotson, the number 3 AA, and Wally Gillum, his story is in the big book, Fired Again. Kelly used to tell me, going to Barberton one night a week, somewhere over there, a poker game. And he used to go over there and sit in on these poker games. He would just sit and just be timers. But every once in a while, like his presence wasn't really welcome, and he would get in on these games, so he felt like the players were tired of his kibitzing, and did all of his money. Walked the railroad tracks up into the YMCA, I don't know how far, 10 miles. Here's a man that was really, whether Dr. Bob did it at first or not, Al Kelly was really ready for this way of life. Before I got here, I had heard who had come down to West to make a lead, which happened to be my first letter I had gotten out of the hospital, the alcoholic second time, and second. And I had gone up home, which is another town from besides Charleston. I had gone to see the director of the bank home loan. I was a mortgage payer, and I wanted to see the man get things straight. I didn't see him. I saw him, and he told me that this would be all right. That this alone, that I could get it caught up whenever I could. But Ethel Macy was meeting that Sunday afternoon. It was a kind of a special thing, and I sat and listened to Ethel Macy talk. Our times after that, you know, Ethel was the first woman, certainly area, over from the time she came into this program until it was in March 1963, and I learned a little, and then I was up here just until I found a place, my family too, my three children, and I found out on Rhymer Road, Akron, which is the same street that Ethel Macy and Celeste for me. the first AA, certainly as far as we know in this area. And it was a night worker. A lot of times in the afternoon, we would drive. Maybe Francis' wife would be with me, and we would we'd see Ethel Macy in the driveway, and we'd stop in and have coffee or iced tea if it were summer. Sit and talk, and she would tell about the old timers town. I knew Bill Dotson too pretty well. You know, I got to know Bill like a lot of people who knew him at the time because he didn't drive. I had a car, and Bill didn't drive, so he had to depend on other people to take him to meetings. And he used to take Bill to Crosby. I took him one time to a meeting down at Lincoln Farm, and that was during the time when they had open meetings one Sunday of the month. Anybody could go in, including women. And on this particular meeting, my wife went along, and just Francis and Bill and a fellow named—I can't even give his name because it's so it would be breaking his anonymity. But he was a kind of a yo-yo. That is, he was in and out of revolving door type, and he was just coming off of a drunk. He started talking, he couldn't. And Bill Dotson liked to talk too. Well, he didn't get a chance to talk all the way on that trip down to London. And so just right after the meeting down there, we had a good lead. I think another deceased old timer from this area, Ken Strait, was leading that meeting, and came to me and he says, "Those of you who have heard can remember how his old Kentucky twang." He said, I'm going to find me another ride back home if you don't." I said, "Bill, that's with me if you want to on the road and put your thumb up, maybe I'll get up." That's the way it was, you know. He couldn't tolerate. Well, it was hard for me and my wife too to tolerate that guy. He had a little more than a problem, I believe. But on one of those trips, I forgot to mention, on one of those jogs by us on Rhymer Road afternoon, we had gone in and it was a little day, and Francis and I were the two of us together, and we went in the house. I sat down here back in the corner, and we were sitting there talking. Came along the conversation, and I thought that same chair you're sitting in was one that Dr. Bob always sat in. So I felt like rising off the thing, the chair that Dr. Bob sat in. This is how smart, you know, I got a hold of me sooner, because I never once thought when Ethel passed of trying to buy that chair. Wouldn't I have something if I could have that chair now? Stupid Westphalian, that's not. Talking about how difficult it was for Al Kelly to get Dr. Bob Smith to sponsor him, of course, reminds a lot of old time. I mean, people, older timers than I am, tell you about how rough it was to get in AA. They didn't fool with you. And of course, we all know when St. Thomas first opened in 1939, first opened as the first general hospital in the United States to open its legs as alcoholics, you only went one time once. Drunk again, you had to find else to go. So, because the term that used to be used quite a bit, wet nursing. I mean, you newer people, not wet nursing. You just don't fool around, you know. You can determine after a period of time whether a person's sincere or not, and if not sincere, you're wasting your time. Let him go, and like Dr. O'Kelly, go on out in time and come back when he's ready. And there's something else. I know that Bill Dotson lead. I've heard another old timer, Ray Schaefer from Coshocton. He's deceased. And Rose, I've heard Ann, I've heard Al Latt, and Kelly. A lot of old ones I've heard. You know, their leads were full of affinity. I'm not a joke, heaven's sake. I was in the murder in the Second World War, and I learned some language in the Corps that would make anybody's face, even you black people, turn red. And so, but it's so unnecessary, you know, when you're talking, certainly when you're talking to a mixed group. AA is a wonderful, it's a spiritual, how can I spiritual? This is my idea, and I have my new, no different structure. How can you be spiritual at the same time? I don't know whether I've helped, and whether I'm going to get this over. I hope I haven't gone over my 15 minutes, and I forgot something. I'm going to leave it up to Mose. I asked Ross about having a prayer at the opening of this meeting. I'm going to let Mose, and I'll show you want to introduce me.
Very fine, Herb. In spite of the fact you'd partially lost your voice, you came through loud and clear. Thank you very much. Our next one, now you have to listen hard because he does go let it fly. Chances are you've had him in to lead your meeting back home. You've probably heard him. He's been active all up and down the line for many years. One of the best AAs to ever walk into a meeting room. Mose, why?
Someone has said it's good if they say nice things about you, but don't inhale them. Shall we pray the serenity prayer together? God grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things that I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Thank you. That prayer has meant much in my life. It still does. Excuse me. Maybe I need a drink right now, huh? Please. Howard Benhall used to say, it's wonderful to be sober. I don't want to forget that. That's one of the keynotes of our whole program. Honesty and gratitude. Get honest with yourself and your fellow man. If I always speak the truth, I don't have to remember what I said. Someone has said, if you can't be find nothing to be thankful and be grateful for, just be thankful for the things that you escaped. I could be down 6 foot under or a vegetable. Some years ago, I met a man from Huntington, West Virginia, and he told me this was his own story. He said, I took a number of trips to Chillicothe due to my drinking. And the last trip that I was there, one day the guard took him over into a big building. And on the way over to that building, he said, now the next time you're coming back, I've got a bed over here with your name on it, and that's where you're going to land. He took him in that building. In that building, there was 800 men, snappy young compared. They drank too much, too long, too often. No coming back. Am I grateful enough? I am an alcoholic. I wouldn't be here, and I'm not ashamed to belong to this program. Not by all men. But I'm so thankful and so grateful that I have the privilege to live in the day and age where this program is here for me to hang on to. Look at the hundreds and thousands and millions of people that have traveled this same road as you and I through the years, but never found what you and I have found. Abraham Lincoln once said to one of his soldiers laying under a tree drunk and said, I hope you drunks get together someday and talk this thing over, and here we have it. Here we have it. And it worked. I'm going to tell you a story. I'm a storyteller anyhow. The guy got on a train. And he sat beside a man, and the man was just snapping his fingers. And he said, well, what's wrong with you? Are you off in the upper story? And he said, well, I'm keeping the elephant away. Why, there's no elephant within 500 miles from here. Well, it works. So with this program, it works. I appreciate this nice crowd. What makes me so happy? There's proven evidence here that you're willing to do something about staying sober, and that's the name of the game. Staying sober one day at a time. You know, this is just like an elevator. Excuse me. This disease of alcoholism. What floor are you going to get off? Are you going to go all the way down to the bottom? You don't have to. I seen a Skid Row film in AA a number of years ago. Chicago Skid Row, and some cold winter mornings as high as 30 of them dead. Am I grateful enough? And it's not the amount what we drink, where we drink, or how long we drink. My last drunk lasted 2.5 years, almost daily. Not completely drunk, but half in the bag, so to speak, trying to float in midair. But I came to the dead end of my road, and I'm so thankful this program was here for me to hang on to. So it's not the amount. I know of a man that drinks 3 bottles of beer and goes haywire, and the man's in the program. It's not the amount of what we drink. And the door latches on the inside. That's up for you to decide. And go to a lot of meetings. Meeting is very, very important. If somebody gives you a cold shoulder at the meeting, keep going. That never stops us from going to the bar. I never went up to the bar going, hey, there's a guy in there that I don't like. Bring me a drink out here. Never. I went in there to get it, and I got it. So a turn of 1,000 miles has to start with one step. We all had a beginning. Now, some of you could say, well, I didn't drink every day like you did. Maybe I'm not an alcoholic. That makes no difference. No. It's not how much you drink, where you drink, how long you drink. It's what alcohol does to you. If you didn't get down as far as I did, you haven't got as far back. Something to think about. About a power greater than yourself? Sure, there must be a power. Look at the spring of the year, when the flowers, the grass, the leaves come out. That you see nobody planted the rose bush out in midair and watch it grow. It takes the good old Mother Earth, like the guy that made a grain of wheat, the size, the shape, the color, the form, like a natural grain. He planted this grain of wheat, but it didn't grow. Why? Because it did not have no life. It has got to give the life. Someone has said, I don't understand everything about this God business, but he said, I don't understand everything about the electricity either, but I'm not going to sit in the dark till I do. I like that. The little girl was asked to recite the 23rd Psalm, that the Lord is my shepherd, and that's all I want. I like that. I'm just so grateful that I've got enough marbles left to play the game. I have a choice. There were so hundreds and hundreds of mornings, I did not have a choice. I have to have a drink in order to navigate. Today I have a choice. I want to keep that in mind. Herb mentioned about Dr. Baum. I heard of Dr. Bob's last talk, the 4th of June, it was 32 years. I had my last drink by the grace of God and the help of you people in the schoolroom of AA. Not tell them more than anyone else, God forbid. In August of 1950, it was the first World Convention, and that was in Cleveland. And I heard Dr. Bob, that was the only convention I ever attended, but I heard his last talk, and he said, keep it simple, don't louse it up. I like that. Then in the big book, he says, I must keep schooling myself. I like that. Little boy came home from school one day, and the father asked him, son, what did you learn today? Not much. I have to go back tomorrow. That's what I have to keep doing something about it. I like what Clem Lane at the hospital, they told me about this 24-hour business. That made sense to me. Clem Lane from Chicago, years ago, led this Founders Day meeting. And he dropped something that I liked and said, if I have a board 365 feet long, he said, nobody can lift that board, but let me cut that board into 1 foot length. It's not hard, one day at a time. I liked it. Just today, that makes it so sweet. Keep it simple. Can I sit at home in easy rocking chair and say I'm grateful? Gratitude demands expression. Like the old Indian said, I'd sooner have my pot boiling over than not boiling at all. This gives us a new lease on life. Someone has said, maybe there are no mustard in here, but there's a lot of better bees. A lot of better bees. Sharing is the key to success. Before you drop out of here, read November the 2nd. The 24-hour book, that book should be in every alcoholic's home. This is my way of thinking. And January 29th says, God is the architect and I'm the builder. Action is a magic word. Then in June the 4th, at the end of the prayer, it says, I pray that I may not be discouraged in the slow progress that I make. It's like Henry Warmer said, it isn't a trying. There's no top rung, there's no diploma, there's no graduation in AA. It's surprising what a man can still learn if he seems to know the law. There's always something to learn if I'm willing. And how much more beautiful the sun looks after a dark, dreary day, and behind every cloud there's a silver lining. And if I magnify my blessings the way I do in my troubles, what a different world it would be. Gratitude, grateful. The 10 lepers that came back and that was healed by the master, and only one of them came back and told the master that he's grateful. There was a ship sinking not too far from shore. And on that ship, there was one good swimmer. And this swimmer rescued 18 people, one by one, to shore before he exhausted. And none of one of these people came back and told the man that he's grateful and thankful for what he done. So them are the things. Sharing is the key to success. November, before you drop out of aid, read November the 2nd. The meditation. We mentioned it. As long as I keep sharing, God is going to keep me filled. And at the end of this meditation, that lake must have an inflow and an outflow in order to be clear. So sharing is the key to success. Bill Wilson, when he first sobered up, he found out the first 5-6 months before he found Dr. Bob, he found by sharing, he kept himself sober. Even if the other guys didn't stay sober, but he kept himself sober. And that is the key to success. Sharing is the key to success. To keep doing something about it. Well, excuse me. Then Bill Dodson, he was sober 19 and a half years when he died. I heard him lead many meetings. He was the third man in this program. He was asked, how long should a man go to these meetings? Bill said, I don't know. I don't want to gamble. Good enough for Bill, and it's good enough for me. Someone said, how long should I go to these meetings? How long you want to stay sober? Someone said, how long should I go to these meetings? Till you want to go. I like that. Till you want to go. Bill Dodson had another story I liked about staying away from that bottle. The three guys went up the mountain for a taxi driving job to be interviewed. The first guy got up to be interviewed and said, how close can you come to the edge of this cliff without going over? The first one said, I could come within 4 inches. The second one said, how close can you come? I can come within 2 inches. The third one said, how close can you come? I don't know, but I know this much. I'm going to stay away from the edge of that cliff just as far as I can. And that's the way he said about him and the bottle. I shall soon have a tiger tied in my front yard with a bottle of booze. Me and alcohol just don't mix, so why should I gamble with it? Someone has said, oh, I can gargle my throat and it don't bother me. Well, sometime later he got drunk. What happened? Well, he forgot the spit. Russ said, keep it down to 15 minutes. In connection with this, I picked up a story in Cleveland last fall. A man was walking along the road on a cold day, and a snake was laying along the road, and the snake said, I'm cold, pick me up. Oh, no, you're a snake, you're going to bite me. No, I won't bite you. He picked the snake up and put it under his coat. Pretty soon the snake got warm, wriggled around, he reached in, the snake bit him. He threw the snake down and said, you told me you wasn't going to bite me. Yes, I know, but you know who I was. I know who the bottle is. Them are the things. The greatest thing in my life is just to be myself, not someone else. Someone has said, well, we have to keep up with the Joneses. Well, if that's the case, you better find out where they're going. Meetings. Stay in dry places. Stay with the winners. It takes some action on our part. You know, I could coast down a hill on a bicycle, but what about going up the next hill? I better do it. Like Ed Barnes always says, it's not the toot of the whistle that pulls the train. It takes action. Any dead fish can swim down the river, but it takes a live one to swim up, don't it? We have to do something. You mean? The whole program hangs on 6 words. Trust God, clean house, and help others. In my way of thinking. Trust God, clean house, and help others. Then prayer. Don't forget to talk to your God. Same as you talk to your fellow man. He's just as close as you let him. God's storehouse is never empty. Meetings. Well, my time is about up. Someone has said, I got two dogs in me, a black one and a white one. They're fighting. The black one is the old nature, and the white dog is the new nature. The good spirit. Well, which dog wins? The one that I feed the most. I like that. Worry is a slight form of atheism. And I still catch myself sometimes. How am I going to handle this instead of let go and let God? The secret of God's comfort is turning things over to Him. Thank you.
There's an old timer down in the Canton groups used to tell this story. Someone from out of state came to visit the group, and the fellow asked George, said, "What do you give? What kind of tokens or prizes do you give for staying sober?" He said, "I don't know what you're talking about." He said, "Well, for 6 months or a year, don't you give something?" And about that time, Mose walked in the door. He said, "Oh, yes, after they've been sober 10 years, we let them grow a beard." You know, way back along the line, it was pretty difficult for a lady to enter our fellowship. Now the meetings you go to, they're just about evenly divided. But our next panelist, when she came on the scene, for quite some time, she was the only lady in the group over around Niles and Youngstown and Warren. I could talk for the rest of our time here about Ann's activities and would run out of time. She has been very active from the day she came on the scene and still as active today as ever. A great lady of AA, Ann C. from Niles.
I'm a shorty. I don't know if I'm going to fit. Thank you. Thank you. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Gee, a lot of people landed here on Friday in the beginning of Founders Day. So many waited till Saturday to show up. Well, I'm happy to be part of this crowd. I love to be where A people are gathered. As Russ said, when I came to AA, a lot of the women hadn't come out of their bedrooms to be counted. They were there. The families protected them. I had a husband who protected me if I couldn't get loose and wander around by myself. I was living in Akron, Ohio when A was born here, but I never dreamed at that time that I would ever take drink number one. I led a very sheltered life, teaching Sunday school at the age of 16. My dad was a lay minister. I didn't know too much about alcohol or its effect on people. I was married before and away from the strict discipline of my parents' home before I picked up the first drink. For a while, no trouble. When the trouble started, I went zooming down. Hurt a lot of people. If my husband's desire for my sobriety had worked, I would have been sober longer than the days I have been sober. But finally, after the end of my drinking, I was a prisoner in my own home. I had a bedroom for a cell, a bottle for a cellmate, and people were shut up. And I no longer cared whether I lived or died. Now, I had been told about AA that I was going to be a do-it-yourself gal and almost killed myself trying. But the day came, I had become a daily drinker, so I wouldn't have to think too much about the long list of people that I was hurting. And I got up one morning and poured that morning drink, which would have meant another day of oblivion, actually, but as I poured that drink, I was weaving in front of the mirror, glanced in the mirror, very shocked at what I saw, fell back on the vanity bench, and took a long, steady, honest look at me that day. That's the day that I quit blaming people and things, and I took a good look at the gal responsible for my predicament. It was me and nobody else in the world. I quit cold turkey, I put that drink down the sink because I still don't, I didn't do so good trying to taper off. I always managed to taper right back on. And I had this drink, and I toyed with the idea, and then I remembered failure after failure. So I figured, well, that if I want to quit drinking, and I do, and want to try to stay sober, and I certainly wanted that, my last drink can be the one I had last night. And that's the way it went. Down the sink went the drink, and I called AA for help. I knew a little bit about AA in that area, enough to know there were no women members in that group. But if that is where I was to get my help, I didn't care. And at that particular time, all the men sat on, the alcoholics sat on one side of the room, the women on the other side, separating the sheep from the goats or something, I don't know. And I had to sit with the wives, the sober wives of the alcoholics, and I'm sure I didn't smell like Chanel No. 5. They were kind. They gave me hope. They said, my husband, one after another, my husband was like you. He's okay now. You're going to be okay. That little glimmer of hope, and I think that's the first thing we find here. No matter how desperate we feel, and I thought I had waited too long to seek help. So they asked if I could stay sober one day, and I said, I'm not sure, but I know I'm going to try. And I would rather die than continue the way I am. I would rather die than drink again. And believe me, folks, there were days I wondered which it was going to be. I walked the floor, I cried, I threw things, and I did not feel good at all. But I didn't take a drink. So the granddaddy of all hangovers did go away. Then I went to the older ones in the group. I had big problems coming up, and I wanted to talk to those who had managed to stay sober in spite of life's problems. And I went to the founders of that group and talked to people who'd been there, who had coped, and none of them gave me bad advice. I had lost interest in food as well as people and things. My health did not return right away. My nerves were bad. My AA friends would go to a doctor. I went to a doctor after complete physical x-rays, the whole bit. I went back for the report. I had lost a lot of weight. It had gone down to 95 pounds. And the doctor said, I cannot find anything physically wrong with you. Your nerves are in bad shape, and what I recommend for you is a little whiskey 3 times a day. When I got through with him, he wanted to drive me to that AA meeting to make sure I got there. And don't ever go to him because he hasn't recommended, if you want to drink, because he hasn't recommended alcohol for any patient since and says he never will. The second doctor, the same routine, and he said, it's just your nerves. I'll write out a little prescription here and it'll make you feel better. I said, what is it? He said, a mild sedative. I said, please tell me what it is. And he told me. I said, save the ink and save the paper. I don't want to take that stuff. Why? I said, I have a sister-in-law who's a confirmed dope addict today, in and out of sanitariums. The first sedation she took in her life is what you want me to take now? I don't want to go down that dead-end street. He said he was glad to hear me say that, but he said, you're close to a breakdown. I said, I made up my mind right now, I'm not going to have one. And he said, and bye, I don't think you will, and I didn't. 2 weeks later, I think it was, I was trying to figure out why I had such a case of frantic serenity. I knew I didn't want to drink. This I've always known, and I still do. If I were to drink for any reason under the sun, the alcohol would only add to my misery, subtract from my happiness, divide my attention, and multiply my troubles. And when you think that way, like Moses, I feel as though I would as soon pick up a can of gasoline and try to put out a fire as to drink for any reason. And I've had tragedy strike since I've been in the program, lost my wonderful husband. My mind, without any warning whatsoever, my mind does not turn to alcohol. But I have been in AA for just a few months, and I went to the biggest meeting I'd ever been to. Oh, I didn't know there were that many people in AA in the whole world. And here, the man who was going to speak got up to the podium, and I almost fell off the chair. I said, what is that man doing up there? They said, well, he's going to give a talk here tonight. That's Dr. Bob. I said, you mean that is the man that I have been reading about? I said, I knew him in Akron. He was a terrible drunk. And I did know Dr. Bob. The first job I ever had was in the Second National Building where his office was. I used to see this character come down to the lunch counter, never ordered food, but Bromo seltzers, tomato juice, oh, he drank liquids by the quart, and he shook so much. And I asked Bill, the owner of the place, one day, what's wrong with that man? Does he have palsy? And Bill, with a great big grin, said, no, he doesn't have palsy. What he has is a perpetual hangover. And I had lived such a sheltered life, I had to ask what a hangover was. And when I was told, I made a classic remark to show you how ignorant I was. I said, well, if that's all it is, why doesn't that crazy man stop? He surely doesn't enjoy shaking like that all the time. Well, here we were meeting in AA, and he came to me after the meeting and said, he often wondered what happened to me. Well, what I did was get married and leave town, and our paths had not crossed. And he said, you know that I used to steer clear of you because they told me you were a little Sunday school teacher and I didn't want any more preaching. And I said, do you know that I stayed away from you for a different reason? I said, you didn't smell exactly like a rose, you know? And he told me that night, anytime you're in Akron, feel free to come to my home, come to my office. I'll always be glad to see you. And he was of tremendous help to me. I didn't really have a sponsor. And one day I said to him, because I couldn't get an answer nearby when I had a big problem, I'd get him on the phone. And then I said one day, could you be my sponsor long distance? He said, you know that I will do anything that I can to be of help. Call on me. So I looked to him and to the rest of the sober people, and as a result, I think I had a chance to learn a little faster in the program, and I got active right away. Mose mentioned meetings. I like to pass on this one thing to you that I heard Dr. Bob say one time. When someone asked him if he had to keep on going to these meetings, said, you don't feel well, you're in pain. At times, he certainly was. Do you have to keep on going to these meetings? Don't you think you should stay home more and rest, and maybe it might even prolong your life? Well, Dr. Bob was one to ponder before speaking, and after some thought, he said, I have three reasons for wanting to continue to go to meetings as long as God gives me strength. He said, this way is working so well. Why should I take a chance? And then he said, why should I deprive myself of the pleasure I get watching new people come into the program and actually seeing them grow spiritually in our fellowship? I wouldn't want to lose that privilege. But he said, the most important reason is I want to be there for the sake of the new man or woman who might walk through that door any meeting night. He said, I am living proof that AA will continue to work as long as we want sobriety and are willing to work the program. And I think he had three real good reasons for continuing to go to meetings, which he did up until the time it was impossible. He helped me so much. Later I met Bill, our co-founder, got to know him real well and loved him. He is a wonderful man. His wife Lois is a wonderful gal. And then I knew Bill, the third man. I can't even think about Bill without getting the third man without getting a real warm glow. He had a warm personality. And then Ethel. I met Ethel, and she and I became instant friends and remained friends until the day that Ethel passed away. I was talking to her within about 5 hours of the time she left us. I'm so grateful that I did get to know some of the, and I don't like the term old timer, believe me, I don't like it. I like the term early bird, don't you? Doesn't it sound nicer? But even if we call ourselves early birds, we must remember that many of us were overdue when we arrived. And I was. But I'm so grateful that I was willing to suffer in order to get well, and I'm so glad I stayed right in the middle of AA. I don't want to be like the little boy that kept falling out of bed. Finally, his mother said, "Why do you keep falling out of bed?" He said, "I guess I don't get in far enough." And I want to stay right in the middle of AA where I feel so secure. And by staying sober a day at a time, didn't think it was possible, but the days have gone by. And I made my important decision on April Fool's Day, good day, and the days, the weeks, and the months have passed by so fast, I can't believe it. I've had over 31 years of the most wonderful fellowship in the whole world, and this is one thing I think of so many times, and I'm so grateful that I became an alcoholic, sought help in AA, because if I hadn't landed here, I would have missed meeting some of the most wonderful people in the whole wide world, and many of them are in this room tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ann, for your example, friendship, activity down through the years. And you're, like I said at the beginning, you're as active today as you've ever been. Just keep it up. Bill Dawson, my God, I'll never forget that man long as I live. He was my buddy. He took a lot of interest in me when I came on the scene. He had this beautiful Kentucky Colonel accent, and he got up and made a comment at a meeting one night. He said, I just kindly let the Lord run it. Said, it usually works out. Said, now I'll admit sometimes it looks to me like he's doing one hell of a poor job, but he said, I know I can't see the whole thing, so I just kind of let him run it, and everything usually works out real good. You know, you get back home next week and go out to one of your meetings, there's a pretty good chance that there'll be more people in that meeting room than there were AAs in the world when our next panelist came on the scene. He's left us a few years ago and went down to Florida and retired. He's one of these great old guys from the East Akron group. They're the ones that took me over when I came on the scene back in 1950. Been a good friend of mine down through the years. It's always great to see him back on Founders Day. Al L. from Florida.
Getting it in position for me. My name is Al L. I have no anonymity. My name is Al Latch. You know, I love you all. And if it was not for this wonderful AA fellowship and each and every one of you people, I would be pushing up a very poor grade of crabgrass somewhere, God knows where. You know, the smart ones come into our fellowship before they have lost much. Others, when they have lost much more. I was one of the stupid ones. I came in when I had lost practically everything, including my self-respect. You know, I came into this fellowship, I don't think I'm bragging, because I'm not. I came into this fellowship 43 years ago. That was in the winter of 1936. But I didn't stay sober very long. I only stayed sober for about 6 months, and I had a very unhappy sobriety. Dr. Bob was my sponsor then, and he was again 38 years ago. And that's the length of my sobriety. It's 36 years, not 43. Now back there, Dr. Bob told me I wasn't going to make it. He says, you're not good material, not unless you change. And I didn't change. I kept up drinking for over 4.5 years. And I got worse and worse and worse. Yeah. It never is the same. Every time an alcoholic gets drunk, it'll never be the same. It's always worse. And, you know, it got so bad, and this is the truth, I died in City Hospital in this city of Akron, Ohio, 38 years ago. I had DTs. They took me to the hospital. I didn't know anything. I was shackled hand and foot to the bed. And I remained shackled until I became paralyzed in both legs and my right arm. So they took off the shackles and put on side rails. But I laid in that bed 21 days. I knew nothing. Just the fantastic dreams, which were the DTs, of course. But there was one thing that was intelligent that I remembered in those 21 days. It was a man dressed like a father in the church. And he seemed to be trying to sell me a Bible. I thought he was a Bible salesman. It was like a dream. But that face was so indelibly impressed upon my subconscious mind that I never could forget his face. Well, I died in that hospital. Yeah. I did really die. My doctor told my wife, no man ever lived in my condition. So he couldn't understand what was keeping me alive so long. I couldn't eat, drink, or swallow. They just fed me intravenously. And so he wondered why that heart wouldn't stop beating. So finally, it stopped. And he checked me out to be sure I was dead. The head nurse then double-checked, and she said I was dead. So she covered me up with the sheet. And while my doctor was completing my death certificate so the undertaker could take me, my left arm went up, the one that wasn't paralyzed, and knocked the sheet off. Damn near scared the doctor to death. Because he knew I was dead. But here I am, I had a reprieve. My God must have given my life back to me. You know, to keep it to keep your life as far as sobriety, you have to give it away. And I'm trying to give it away some here. You know, our serenity prayer is so often needed. Yeah. It's like a friend of mine. He had a bad tooth. And it was really hurting. So he said, I'll have to go to the dentist. And that he did. The dentist said, well, I'll have to pull it. And the dentist pulled the tooth. But in retrieving the tooth from his mouth, it slipped from his forceps and went down in his throat. And the dentist says, oh my. He said, he tried, but he says, I can't get the tooth. You'll have to go and see another specialist. So that he did. And the other specialist, after careful examination, he just says, I can't do anything for you either. That tooth has gone down in your esophagus. So he had to go see another specialist. And that specialist, after very careful examination, says, you know, I can't do anything for that tooth has slipped and gone down into your stomach. So you'll have to see another specialist. And that he did. And after very careful examination, the other specialist says, you know, that tooth has gone down into your bowels. You'll have to see another specialist. And that he did. And that specialist, after very careful examination, says, you know, I can't do anything either. That tooth has gone down into your rectum. That's to see another specialist, and that he did. And the other specialist, after very, very careful examination, he said, my God, man, you've got a tooth growing in your ass. You better see a dentist. You know, I didn't start to, you'll be shocked about this. I never started to drink until I was just about 21 years old. Oh, what a pansy he must have been. But I became one of the worst alcoholics. Yeah, one of the worst. It really floored me. I was a mess. You know, when it kills you, you must have been a mess. I sure was that. You know, oh, I was very bad. I was bankrupt in every department, and I mean every department. Even my self-respect. You know, I had to have something more. Well, I see, first, they kept me in City Hospital for a month, and then I went to the state institution. I had no money. I didn't even have decent clothes. I had one pair of shoes probably sold, half sold three times. My wife had me probated through the probate court so it wouldn't cost anything. Because she couldn't afford to keep me. I was unemployable. I had been an industrial engineer. But I had been unemployable for some time. So there in the state institution, you know, I wanted it. I fully came back to myself. And I was really sorry for myself. If you ever want to be sorry for yourself, just get in that predicament. They said I was a hopeless paralytic all through drinking. So I stayed in that state institution for 3.5 months. I had the attendant get me the big AA book out of Cleveland Public Library. I didn't ask him to see Dr. Bob, no. That's ego and false pride. But he got me the big book. And I read that book from cover to cover. And I prayed many times a day. I wanted another chance in life. I had thrown them all over my shoulder. Oh, it wouldn't happen to Al Lash. No. It happened to somebody else, but not me. But here it had. I was all washed up. I was no good. I was a has-been. I was a paralytic. And I wanted another chance in life. And I got it. In 3.5 months, I walked out of that state institution with 2 strong legs, 2 strong arms, and a good brain, I hoped, and hired back into a very large industrial enterprise. That was during World War II, as an industrial engineer. And I've been going ever since. You know, about 39 years ago, no, that would be about, yeah, 39 or 40 years ago, both of those years, I never got any Christmas cards. Nobody ever sent me one. But that year I got one. And it was a photograph of the rear end of a horse with its tail elevated. And it said right across that top of that, it was postcard size, that picture was. And in white ink it was written on it, "Merry Christmas. I hope this makes you feel perfectly at home." You know, whoever sent me that card must have known me. Yeah, he must have known me real well. Because I sure was that back in those days. I was no good whatsoever. You know, let's see what time it's going to be. I finally had to have a goal in life. A goal, not the short ones that I want to buy a home or a car or get a raise. I had to have something that I never could attain in a lifespan. You have to have that, you know. Because once you attain your goal, you start to coast, and then the decline starts. You never can have it happen. You know, my goal that I arrived at was self-respect. And I had practically totally lost it. And I'll never be able to attain that 100% proficiency if I live to be 200 years old. No human being can. There was only one man who could do that, and that was Jesus Christ. And I sure am nothing like him. But I'll come a lot closer to self-respect complete if I try. You know, this AA fellowship is for those who really want it all the way. We have millions and millions of those in the world that need it. Oh, yes. But only a little over 1 million who really want it. I want it all the way. I don't have any reservations for this or that. I want AA all the way. And by the grace of God, and all you good people, as I said before, and I love all of you, that I will. There's something I had to arrive at, though. To love all of you, each and every one of you, I had to learn to love myself. With all my imperfections, and that's very necessary. Learn to love yourself, and you can never fully love anybody else until you love yourself with all your imperfections. Thank you for listening. I'm very proud to be selected to pinch hit for Alex Marconi, who was supposed to talk here tonight. And Alec's a wonderful fellow, and he's did one wonderful job of sobriety. It's unfortunate that he couldn't be here, but I'm proud that I was selected to take his place, because I love Alex very much. He's a great guy. Thank you.
Thank you, Al. Yes, Al did have about a half hour's notice that he was going to be on this panel tonight because Alex has been quite ill the past week. I hope that we'll all remember Alex in our prayers. And I knew that Al was the kind of an AA who would move right in when I asked him to and do a good job, which he did. Thank you very much, Al. Thanks to all of you. Thanks for staying within the time. That's great because we do have more meetings tonight. And I think we finished real good. We have plenty of time to take a break after our meeting is over before we go to the next one. Thank you very much, and I'll turn the meeting back to our chairman, Keith. Let's give Keith a hand.
Thank you, Russ, and thank you, panel. I thought that was a beautiful job. As a token of our appreciation, we have reproduced in booklet form the last original draft of Chapter 5, which was printed in 1938 and sent to the some 400 members of our fellowship at that time. If Edward L. Brady is in the audience, would he please see Gene Geddes? There's a Volkswagen Rabbit. It's aqua color. It's from Kentucky, and the license plate is CEX150. Will you all rise and join hands while Ross and the panel lead us in the Lord's Prayer?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever. Amen.